Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Unsquish the Fish. Unsquish the Fish. The podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff.
Fins up.
Fins up.
Fins up.
For the first time ever, I am live.
Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live!
That's right, that's right. What's going on, everybody? This is Ron, Unsquish the Fish, doing a little something different here. I will still be doing my normal shows, as I always do, but I'm going to be supplementing with some live shows. My intent is to do one a month on the last Wednesday of every month at 7:30, but I decided to throw in, I guess I'd only call it a practice show. So let's just see how it goes. So far, all the buttons have worked correctly. But with me today, nice enough to join me, is Lewis Sung from Fin Maniacs. Say hi, Lewis.
Hi, Lewis.
And Keith Beebe from Finsiders.
Thanks for having me. I love that intro.
Isn't it awesome? I want one for my show. I need to figure out how to make it work.
I can just see the pyro going off while that thing plays. It's awesome.
Yeah, obviously I did not do that myself. I had it professionally created for me. It didn't cost much. It didn't cost money. It sounds a lot more fancy than I guess it actually is, but I'll take it. All right, everybody, if you are listening right now and here in a little bit would like to call in, the number is 773-897-6237. But first, I thought I would take it away. We'll start with a little bit of news. Sue and BC, contract renegotiations. What you got, Lewis, on that?
Well, it's pretty simple. As per his contract specifications, Rod Ndamukong Suh had a proviso in his contract that said if Miami wanted to make some cap space, they could move ahead his cap hits about $6 million a year for the rest of his contract in exchange for a big chunk of it being gone for this year. So I think Miami saved up about $18, $20 million just by restructuring right now. And it's going to be a little harder moving forward as to be expected, but Miami once again wants to be big players in free agency, so that is eventually what led to it. And also the fact that it's not like it's a big surprise. I'm pretty much sure everybody knew that the Miami was going to do it. I mean, in order to have this much money tied up in two players, I mean, I look at it like this. If Ndamukong Suh gets his money moved forward and Ryan Tannehill doesn't work out, then we can cut Tannehill. And we have our money back anyway, so that's okay. Plus, the whole idea that the salary cap goes up another $10 million every year anyway, so that also helps out. And as for Koamisi, the Koamisi thing is really just a matter of – it's not even that big of a deal. It's not that substantial as far as I know. It's really going to be like four – not even that much money, really. So it's going to be a very small amount that's going to be saved, but in exchange for making it guaranteed, which means Miami obviously sees him in his plans, at least for this year. So going forward, we'll see what happens. The only thing that's changed is that he's going to make a little less money, and his money is going to be guaranteed, so we can't cut him for this year. Next year is exactly the same as if the contract had never been restructured. It would be a simple matter of we can cut him or we don't. So I don't have a problem with the Koamisi restructure, and personally, I'm not as down on the Ndamukong Suh thing as a lot of other people are, because again, I expected Miami to be big players in free agency, so for better or worse, and I don't really have a problem with it as long as Miami just makes some good moves for once. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, that was my first thought on it. I know we had talked about on my show a few weeks back that one of the advantages is, if you take the big money of Sue and you push it off to the future, well, the salary cap will be a little bigger then, so it'll absorb a little bit more. That is one advantage of it, but obviously the reason they're doing it is to what? Be a player in free agency. What are your thoughts on it, Keith? Do you think it's a good move about restructuring Sue? Bad move? Neutral?
Ultimately, I think it works out. It's a little bit staggering when I think his cap hit next year is now $20 million with that added $6 million tacked on. So, I mean, it's it's not an awesome situation going forward, but considering what the Dolphins want to do in free agency, it was almost a no-brainer. And, I mean, you could see that they had this in mind that this could be the case when they signed him last year. So, I mean, it was in there. You might as well use it anyway. And, I mean, Lewis brought up a great point that if we're in the unfortunate situation where Ryan Tannehill doesn't work out and we decide that we're going to go ahead and move on regarding the quarterback position, then, I mean, this is a moot point anyway, because you're pretty much taking out the bulk of that contract. So, I mean, it works. And considering their holes on defense, it has to be done. I mean, you can't go forward even with or without Olivier Vernon, and I'm assuming it's going to be without. You can't expect to do anything in free agency, and then I expect they'll try to add more cornerstone type players in the draft, like a franchise type cornerback, maybe a linebacker. We've talked about pass rusher. If you're adding those guys and then you're trying to go ahead and bring in strong starters and depth through free agency, that's just, I mean, you had to do it. So, I mean, ultimately it's a winning situation, but like I said, that 2017 cap hit, you look at that and you're like, ugh.
Yeah, it was going to be that ugly this year. So I guess one way or another, we're going to be eating. Well, not necessarily eating. Sue ends up being a productive player. I wouldn't call it a bad thing, but we really don't know yet.
You choose your battles.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Mario Williams was in town recently. Anybody have thoughts on that, Lou? I'm sorry, how he left? Okay.
Yeah, I think he left now.
Go ahead.
So the whole – okay, sorry. I mean, the whole Mario Williams thing, I mean, I don't really have a problem with it. I look at it like, okay – and I'm going to have to start by going with Olivier Vernon first, because this has been the main issue so far with Dolphins fans overall, is that they didn't want Sue's contract to be restructured because they essentially wanted to take 2016 and make it a rebuilding year. They didn't want Miami to try and push in free agency. They didn't want anybody to try and – they didn't want them to try and push to compete, because in their eyes, they're not ready to compete anyway, and so doing so would be a waste of time. And – so Mario Williams is essentially – getting Mario Williams would be the same as saying we still think we can win and we're trying to do that. Now, that in and of itself is the main problem, because by the same token as they want the Dolphins to be in a rebuilding year, they also want to evaluate the players that are there. And if they fail, then they're going to say that those players suck and they need to be removed anyway next year. So no matter what Miami did, really, it was going to be a problem. And it was going to cause a lot of drama that really didn't need to happen. So I say with the Mario Williams thing, I don't have a problem with it, because considering what Olivier Vernon is going to be making, like 12, 15 million or whatever amount of money he's going to wind up making, that's a lot of cash for somebody who's not really that special. I mean, I'm sorry, Olivier Vernon. I love the guy. He's a great guy. I love his mom. He's a lot of fun. But he's not worth 12, 15 million. And somebody like Mario Williams would be. And I know there are going to be people bringing up, well, he was lazy last year, he's not worth it. Well, he didn't like Rex, and that's pretty much the only reason he didn't play hard. I mean, every year up until that, he was playing like one of the best pass rushers in football. I mean, 10 sacks, 13 sacks, 14 and a half sacks, and then the 1 year with Rex, and suddenly everything goes wrong. So I don't see it as a Mario Williams problem as much as it was a Rex Ryan problem. So he got mad at Rex, and I can't imagine he would do the same if he went to Miami. So I was personally hoping Mario Williams wouldn't get to leave Miami. And if we could get him for $10 million for however many years, because that's how much pass rushers like him make on the open market, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I would have been just fine with it. And that would have been able to say goodbye to Olivier Vernon.
Definitely. I understand where you're coming from. I know that the talent has been there in the past, but it does concern me having a player on the team that says, well, he's mad at the coach, so he doesn't want to play, because I kind of feel like in Miami, we've heard a lot about that. Made that as
well.
An
okay, I understand, Ron, but it's not, again, I don't really see it that big of a deal, because it's not so much he was mad at the coach per se, because the coach was badly misusing him and he knew it and he didn't like trying. So, but if you use him properly, which I imagine Adam Gase and Vance Joseph will, because he's going to be in a 4-3 doing pass rushing, then he really has no reason to be upset. If he's going to get his money and he's going to wind up playing hard, like he's going to want to prove that, hey, I can still do this. Oh, and by the way, Rex, here's what happens. This is why you shouldn't be misusing me. So in that aspect of it, I don't really have a problem with Mario Williams, and I'm not really concerned about his being lazy or whatever. Adam Gase is not going to be Rex, and they're not going to look at him and say, you know what, you're a really good pass rusher, let's drop you into coverage.
Except I know that they've talked about, I know we're starting with a 4-3 because we think that's what our personnel dictates, but I have heard rumors about wanting to switch over to the 3-4. You've mentioned that before, Keith, as well, I believe, on your show. Now, what would happen if we had Mario Williams and then all of a sudden they decide, okay, now we want to run a 3-4? Are they going to get upset and want to go somewhere else again? Or what would you think would happen?
Well, right now what you're hearing is that they're going to have their defensive ends aligned in a wide 9, which Mario Williams fits better than Olivier Vernon, in my opinion.
Could you do me a favor, explain to me what wide 9 means?
Essentially what it means is Miami's going to have its defensive ends lined up far to the outside shoulder of the offensive tackles. Which means so they're coming at essentially a 45-degree path down toward the quarterback. So I mean when you're running that formation, I mean defensive tackle is important because you're going to need guys who can penetrate and occupy multiple blocks. But it pretty much forces the offensive tackle to and it kind of takes away the double team from the guard too. So I mean when you have that defensive formation, I mean, you're looking for guys who are quick off the ball, are still strong too, great counter moves, can work there as well. So Miami's going to be using that. I don't think Olivier Vernon's a great fit. I mean, they've used Olivier Vernon in a wide 9 where when he's like, if you've looked at any game you've ever seen, Cameron Wake, or if you've seen Olivier Vernon lined up far to the outside of the offensive tackle shoulder, that's a wide 9, technically a wide 9 technique. If that was where they're standing, that's what you would call it. So okay. I don't think Olivier Vernon's a great fit in that. I think that he had flashes rushing out of that alignment, but he's not an explosive athlete. He's not a guy who wins consistently with quickness. So if you're going to put someone in there, I think Mario Williams is a better fit for right now. But I don't look at Mario Williams as a long-term guy anyway. The reason I say that is I think Miami has a unique situation in its defense in that they have a cornerstone franchise defensive tackle. They managed to land a second contract guy, which is I think the last time that happened on the defensive side of the ball would have been Reggie White in 1993 with Green Bay. I mean, that just doesn't happen often. So they have a guy in the middle they can build around. They have Vernon, who's maybe not quite a fit for what Vance Joseph is looking to do on the defensive side of the ball. You have Cameron Wake, who's an older guy. So you're able to build around the defensive tackles, and they're kind of in a limbo right now where you either have guys who don't really fit what you want to do or you guys who are older. So as Lewis mentioned, that this is in a way kind of a rebuild year in that you know what you have in the middle. You'd like to see more from Jordan Phillips. I think he's a talented guy. We've heard about Paul Solia and whatnot, but through the draft and maybe if you're able to bring in a guy who can do things early for you, like a Mario Williams. I have heard the 3-4 scheme. Vance Joseph worked under Wade Phillips in Houston, and Wade Phillips is a mastermind with the one gap 3-4, which is what everyone just watched Denver pretty much completely dismantle Carolina with in the Super Bowl. So I don't know that that's going to happen. Vance Joseph has worked with a lot of different guys, but I know that someone who had a big impact on him was Wade Phillips. I would love to get a one gap 3-4 in Miami. You always hear people say, well, Ndamukong Suh, can he play in the 3-4? He played in the 3-4 at Nebraska when he almost beat the University of Texas by himself in the Big 12 National Championship in 2009. That's not an issue for him. So, and some of the pieces they have in there, I mean, it wouldn't be on every down, but I mean, you can use Jordan Phillips as a nose tackle. I mean, there's especially a proven disrupt, a guy who is for being 340 pounds is awfully quick. I mean, so you have some really nice pieces that you can work in there if they go to that. And at that point, yeah, Mario Williams, I don't think would be part of the plan, so to speak. So, I mean, there's so many options that they have here, but I'm also thinking that when they talk about why nine, as soon as I heard that, I was like, well, I don't see Olivier Vernon working in the long term out of that alignment.
I think that's part of why they're willing to jettison him. So I wouldn't say easily, but it kind of seems like we know he's going to be gone. I think most of us have accepted that anyway. Do you think that, Keith?
Yeah, I think that they had a price on him. I mean, you saw that they indicated that it was in the $12 million range with that transition tag. I mean, he's getting 12. I mean, you're talking about $12.73 million, which is a far cry from that $15.7 million he'd see with the franchise tag. Somebody, we keep hearing Jacksonville. Jacksonville has something like $80 million in cap space, just some like Scrooge McDuck type amount that they've got. They're sitting on right now. Oakland. I mean, you're one of those teams I expect will come in and probably press pretty close to that $15 million that Olivier Vernon's camp came out and indicated they thought he was worth. And I mean, if that's the case, that's fine, because as I mentioned, with the Dolphins' plans going forward, I don't think it would be wise to spend that kind of money on a guy who isn't necessarily going to fit what you're looking to do going forward. I think that with Vance Joseph, penetration at the defensive line is going to be a big, big deal. And as we've seen people in the media point out, we've heard analysts point out, Olivier Vernon's a guy who is a great complementary player, but in terms of creating on his own, creating that disruption consistently, you don't really see that from him. Whereas a guy like Cameron Wake, the opposite end, a guy who does create his own penetration. So with what Vance Joseph and the Dolphins want to do going forward, I can see why they've cemented that $12 million as that's what we believe you're worth.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Any other news, Lewis, that you can think of? Actually, yeah, one thing. I've been hearing a lot of rumors about Jordan Cameron getting the axe.
Jordan Cameron.
Yeah. Not Cameron.
Well,
go ahead, Lewis.
Well, now the news is that I think I hear an echo, actually.
Yeah, a little bit. It's okay.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, now the news is more along the lines of how they seem to be wanting to restructure with Jordan Cameron, which I think is the better move anyway. I mean, Jordan Cameron has proven that in the whole problem of getting the small deal was that they were worried about his injuries. They were worried about possibly him getting another concussion. And so with that out of the way, now Miami knows that he's a good player and he's not going to wind up getting hurt a bazillion times. So with that in mind, you can look at Jordan Cameron and say, okay, so what can we do with you now that we know you're not going to get hurt? So extending him is not an issue for me because we already know what he can do when he has good play. When he's healthy, he can be a really good player. And again, it has to be utilized properly. The Dolphins coaching staff decided that, well, I guess we're just going to have to turn you into a blocking tight end. So, and that was obviously not the right move because Jordan Cameron is not built to be a blocking tight end. He is a receiver, and that's what he was good at doing in Cleveland. So I don't know why you would bother to waste your time trying to make him a blocker, but I digress. In any case, now with Adam Gase, who says he wants to make sure that the players are going to be used to the best of their individual abilities, that would mean that Jordan Cameron would get a chance to be that seam threat that he was supposed to be all along. And so extending Jordan Cameron and maybe making his cap hit a little less painful going forward, that works for me just fine because I think Jordan Cameron is one of the better tight ends in the league when he's healthy, and healthy is what he is right now. So extending him, absolutely, I would go for that. I really don't want to let him go for nothing because if we let him go, then we're going to have a problem deciding who we're going to replace him with.
That's really the biggest issue there is I've been hearing people say, oh, cut him, and then they can renegotiate another deal. I tell you right now, if you cut Jordan Cameron, he is gone. There are 10 GMs with their finger on the button because there are so many teams that would like to have a tight end like Jordan Cameron, and they'd almost pay the money that we're going to pay him this year in order to do it. I mean, look at what Zach Ertz got this year. The guy's caught 9 touchdowns combined in 3 seasons. And look at his $42 million contract because there's just no tight ends to be had. Look who's available right now free agency-wise. I think they locked up Gates, if I'm not mistaken, in San Diego now, I was told. So we got Dwayne Allen and Zach Miller. I mean, these are not this isn't getting me excited. You got to keep this guy. I know a lot of people are saying, oh, he's so overpaid, but man, I'm telling you, everybody's overpaid. Everybody's overpaid, but it would be crazy for me to cut him. What do you think, Keith?
I think that the interest Jordan Cameron has in sticking around with the Dolphins is that if you look at what Adam Gase was able to do with Julius Thomas in Denver, I mean, that's the goal if you're Jordan Cameron and if you're the Dolphins looking to get more out of Jordan Cameron, because he has that sort of flexed out matchup nightmare. He brings that to the table. I mean, it's hard to defend guys like Jordan Cameron who run really well at that size and tear up the seam. So I think there's interest for him to stay there. I think he's in a good place with Adam Gase going forward, which so now when you see that news about him being open to a restructure, that doesn't surprise me. And when Gase came out at the combine and said that he liked what he had in Jordan Cameron, that certainly didn't surprise me. And I know it's kind of a fool's errand to go out there and try to compare everything on this team to the personnel that our current coach has had in with previous teams. I know that we always wanted to do that with Philbin and the Green Bay Packers, but I think that Julius Thomas was an absolute cornerstone of that Denver offense, especially in its record-setting year. I mean, you saw what Denver did in 2013, and Julius Thomas was a huge part of it. So I'm not saying Jordan Cameron's a Julius Thomas type player, but I think that he can have that kind of a similar impact relative to what the Dolphins want to do.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. I think it would be crazy to cut him. I think your options are so limited. And you probably can't name, or you could name any position, but tight end to me has to be one of the hardest positions to go draft a guy and have him get you some immediate production. Such a hard position to learn. So much you have to do. You have to remember. Not very often we see a tight end who can just explode on the scene as a rookie. Even the great ones like Jimmy Graham and Gronk, I don't think those guys had huge seasons, their rookie season. So I think that we need to stick with what we got in this case and make it work.
Yeah, it's a rare skill set at tight end. You're talking about, you want a guy who's, what, about 6'4", 6'5", 250 pounds, about, in case you want to use him as an inline blocker. And you like to see those guys running 4.5, 4.6. I think Greg Olsen, coming out of University of Miami, ran something like a 4.5, and he was about 6'5", 255, 260 pounds. I mean, that is exceptional athleticism for a person that size. So, yeah, it's in today's game, I mean, those players are so important, but they're so rare. And if you look at the draft every year, you'll be fortunate if you can find more than two of those guys. I think that there's one guy projected to go in the first round this year, and it's Hunter Henry out of Arkansas. You just don't see a lot of tight ends in the first round every year. And it's just, I mean, there's not a lot of guys with that skill set walking the planet.
Yeah, that's true. And even if you decide, well, we're going to draft him, I mean, you're not going to draft him with the 8th overall pick. And with all the needs on defense, you're sure as heck not going to drop down just so you can draft Hunter Henry. And he's not likely going to be there with the 8th pick in the second round, because a lot of people have him going to the first round in Green Bay. So there's really no other options. It's Jordan Cameron, guys. I think it would be a big mistake to cut him, and we would be sorry as a team for this season anyway.
He's relatively young anyway. It's a nice fit. I know people always want to bag on the chemistry thing with Tannehill and Cameron, but I thought that they hooked up on some pretty impressive plays last year, considering the situation. And I mean, like, why wouldn't you, if you're able to restructure, why wouldn't you mine that and see what you come up with? Especially because, I mean, there's no Jordan Cameron on the free agency market. So, I mean, I think the juice is worth the squeeze.
Yeah, I would agree in this case. All right, Lewis, a couple of weeks ago, you had a special guest on your show on Fin Maniacs, which is now on iTunes, too, as well, which is cool. You had a special guest, Channing Crowder, and I have to say, I was driving home from work late night and listening to what he said and some of the things he had to say about the Miami Dolphins. Not necessarily negative things, but just kind of laying it out what some of the problems are. And I got to be honest with you, I wanted to crash my car into a pole when he really laid it out. So if I
you wanted to commit suicide?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that bad, quite that, but I just wanted it to be over. I didn't want to hear anymore. it was pretty nasty the way he lays it out. So I actually have some of that audio and a little bit of that interview right now from Crowder, which I will play for everybody.
Things start up front. Start it up front. If they don't want to get a big fat guy, then like I said, go get one of these cornerbacks. But there are the four positions that I believe football runs around, and a lot of people interchange these four. Quarterback's always first. It's a quarterback-driven league. Who has to protect him? The left tackle. Who's he throwing it at every damn play? The cornerbacks, and who's trying to get that guy on the ground? The defensive ends. And if you look at those four positions for the Dolphins, not one of them is locked in. You don't know who your corners are this year. You don't know if Brent will be back, if he's going to take a pay cut. They just cut all the other cornerback. You don't know who's even starting on the other side. OV's a free agent. Cameron Wake's hurt. Brandon Albert, love him to death. Great dude. Do a lot of charity work with him. Respectfully, he's a little long in the tooth. 30-plus years old, coming off a knee injury. Didn't play at a high level this year for the duration. Had some good games, but he was coming off that knee injury. Can he give you 16 games? And then Tannehill, we talked about him for 10 minutes earlier. We don't know what he has. So the top four positions in football, the Dolphins have none of them solidified, none of them to say we have a Pro Bowler at this position, this position, this position. I think we need to worry about those four.
After I heard that, I will have to say I was kind of like, oof. I mean, I know that we were heading into some trouble this year, but, I mean, he really laid it out on the, you know, he just put it out there just eloquently. You know, you could tell it wasn't like he was reading off notes or something. I mean, he truly understands what the issues were. So tell me your reaction. I'll go to you first, Lewis, about after Crowder said that. I mean, he said that to you in the moment. What were your thoughts on that? Because, he really said a lot there.
I mean, the whole interview was just me thinking, wow, okay. And then just thinking rationally, obviously he was right about a lot of the stuff. I mean, like he said the word established, and I think established may be a little bit of the wrong word because we have already established that Brandon Albert is our left tackle. Now, can we count on him long term? In that sense, the answer is no. But he is our established left tackle. I think the word that maybe should have been used is something more along the lines of he's not our future left tackle. He's just what we have there right now. Now, the other thing is that. He's right. He was right about a lot of stuff that he said. I mean, Channing talked about how the defensive end, the quarterback, obviously, and he's right about a lot of the stuff that happened. It is a quarterback driven league, and I always understand. And I understand in the context that he used it that he's right in that everything pretty much revolves around the quarterback. But the way he said it, he brought up the defensive ends, he brought up the left tackles, he brought up this, he brought up that. In that sense, I don't have a problem with saying that it's a quarterback-driven league, that everything revolves around the quarterback, because in a way, he's right. You're always trying to get the quarterback on the ground, you always have to protect the quarterback, and then, of course, there's the quarterback himself. So with that in mind, yes, I do agree with what he said about how the quarterback is the most important position. But I also have this in mind, is that the Dolphins need to try and put out some fires like one at a time. You can't handle everything all at once. You have to be able to focus on a specific position. You have to be able to focus on something that you want to fix right now. That's why I've said that this defense is not going to be fixed in one season. It's just not going to happen. You have to choose what you're going to fix first and then work on that. Now, Miami wants to get Mario Williams. Okay, so that would mean that they're not going to try and focus on the defensive line in this draft. They're not going to draft a DeForest Buckner. They're not going to draft a Noah Spence or something like that. They're not going to draft somebody like I can't even think of the name, Joey Bosa right now. They're looking to draft somebody, maybe a cornerback, since that's the only position that I haven't heard the Dolphins want to actually look at in free agency. They're looking at linebackers. They're looking at defensive linemen. So I would assume that Vernon Hargreaves or Mackenzie Alexander is who they want in the draft. Channing was right on a lot of stuff, and I have to give him props for knowing the Dolphins so well. The Dolphins have issues, but we're gonna see what happens. The whole Tannehill thing is the biggest one, and we're gonna see for sure what we should expect going forward.
All right, Keith, when you heard that, Keith, how long have you been a Dolphins fan?
Since probably 1988.
Okay, so a long time.
Yeah, a long time.
Lewis, how long have you been a Dolphins fan?
I was probably indoctrinated into the fandom by my father, so probably since the day I was born, 1993.
Okay, and I've been a fan, I can comfortably say, I'd say since 1984, first game I remember seeing was the, I guess that might be officially 85, but 84 season, the Super Bowl that we lost. That was the first game I remember watching, and even though we lost, I was a fan ever since. 4 years, and years predating us, and people listening have memories of the 70s and the 72 undefeated season, obviously, and Mercury Morris, and you name it. You name it. This team has been successful from almost the get-go all the way up into the late 90s. And then even then after that, Jimmy Johnson came on. Yeah, that didn't bring us a Super Bowl, but, boy, he built one hell of a defense, in my opinion. I mean, one season I think we allowed, what, maybe 10, 11 points a game average or something to that effect with Jason Taylor, Zach Thomas, and those guys, Sam Madison, Patrick Surtain, Bowens and Gardner in the middle, Trace Armstrong. That was a great defense. And then all of a sudden, in the past 10, 11 years, something happened to cause really kind of what we see now. Now, I don't want to sit here and claim that we're going – to maybe be walking into what could possibly be an epically bad season. But let's face it, as much as we're kind of hoping that, oh, maybe we'll just be kind of average again and start to kind of work some of these kinks out, we might be headed for an epically bad season. Maybe not, but the question is, and I'll go to you first, Keith, the root cause, how did we get here? What happened? What were the big mistakes made that you can think of that brought us from so many years of success and being competitive and being in at least the playoff picture, if not the Super Bowl talk, if not maybe even the Super Bowl, AFC championship game, all that, to what we have now?
I chalk it up to two things, coaching instability and, well, front office instability too, and also bad drafting. And, I mean, there are examples throughout this team's history, even when after they drafted Dan Marino in 1983, they didn't hit on another first-round pick until, I think, Lewis Oliver in 1989. And, I mean, like, that was a margin. I mean, that was a decent pick. And then they drafted Richmond Webb ninth overall in 1990. And then they drafted Keith Sims in the second round that year. So all of a sudden, you just rebuilt the left side of the line for Dan Marino. So, I mean, and there's a stretch between, you know, from 86 to 89. Where the team just really wasn't that good and they weren't drafting that well. And, I mean, there's just been bad examples of bad drafting through the years, and especially now. I mean, we see it that, I mean, their draft picks are so hit and miss now.
Okay. And, Lewis, what are your thoughts? What do you think brought us to this point right now, you know, coming from where we were to where we are?
Well, the obvious thing to think about is that, the Miami Dolphins haven't found a new quarterback since Dan Marino. That's the easiest thing to look at. That's the easiest way to blame. And that's when it becomes easy to hashtag blame Tannehill. So, but again, a lot of what happens is that the quarterback is a problem. And there's also the whole problem of, well, we have not been able to put together two units at a time. It's always been one or the other. Either we have a good offense or we have a good defense. When I did my research for what actually wins championships, and even when I did come to the conclusion that the defense is usually what wins in the end, there were a lot of teams out there just the same that their offense and their defense were both top 10 in the league. So that with that in mind, that essentially says that if you want to win in the league, you have to be able to do both. And Miami has not been able to do both for a very, very long time. We had an awesome defense. We had Jason Taylor, Zach Thomas, Brock Marion, Sam Madison, Pat Surtain. I mean, the list goes on and on for what kind of a defense, what kind of players and personnel we had on that roster when they had this, how we had that supercharged defense. But the offense was essentially either run through Ricky Williams or it was run through a quarterback who we couldn't trust to run it anyway. So Jay Fiedler, I mean, he was a good game manager, but he was not. He was definitely nothing special, nothing to write home about, and I still find it laughable that people actually compare him to Tannehill when it comes to talent, when talent-wise. Like, results, sure, Jay Fiedler got better results, but he ran the offense through Ricky Williams. There was nothing special about Jay Fiedler. And then, of course, there's...
He had that defense I was talking about, the Jimmy
And
Johnson.
He had that defense, right. Yeah. And
that was more of it than anything in my mind.
Right, and of course, then there's this whole long list of quarterbacks. I mean, A.J. Feely, Ray Lucas, Gus Frerotte, Dante Culpepper didn't work out. We could have had Drew Brees, and obviously that's the big story. We don't know if Drew Brees would have turned out to be Drew Brees without Sean Payton. Personally, I think he would have done pretty well with Nick Saban, but I digress. It's been a long, long road of just bad decisions with personnel making, bad decisions with coaching, bad decisions all around. And when people blame Steve Ross for all this stuff going wrong, again, I get upset because it's not – Steve Ross hasn't been with – Steve Ross was not even thinking about owning the Dolphins for a very long time, and the Dolphins were already becoming a bad team. So you can't blame Ross for the Dolphins' long, long history of failure. They've already been failing. So I don't – just bad decisions, man. Bad decisions all around with the quarterbacks, the offense, the defense, the coaches. There's never been a time since Dan Marino where we could look at the team and say, yeah, we've got a good group of everything. All the Super Bowl winning teams, they have a good group of pretty much everything. And that's something that Miami has not had.
Some of the team's best draft picks – have been made almost in spite of unfortunate things that come out. And the great example of that is in 97 when they drafted Yetiel Green in the first round. Second round, they got Sam Madison out of Louisville, and they also drafted Jason Taylor out of Akron. And you know, Yetiel Green tears his ACL, his quadricep. He tore everything that first day of practice. So you had everyone talking about how that was a busted draft for them, but they managed to get the best pass rusher and the best cornerback in the history of the franchise in that draft. I mean, next year they draft John Avery, who turned out to be nothing, but in the second round they get Patrick Surtain, you know, who along with Troy Vincent and Sam Madison, those are the best cornerbacks in the history of the Miami Dolphins. So, I mean, like, they were still making quality picks. Even, I mean, the weird thing is they weren't hitting on their first round picks. And then you see, they start to trade away those first round picks. They didn't have another first rounder until 2001. They took Jamar Fletcher over Drew Brees.
Yeah, we went years, I remember, without a first round pick. It was, I didn't pay as much attention to the draft back then, but it was definitely odd. Every year it felt like we had no first round pick.
Yeah, they gave it away all the time. They traded the first round pick for Ricky Williams and then the second round pick in the escalator after he ran for a certain amount of yards.
Well, in hindsight, Keith, you just mentioned Ricky Williams. Did you have a problem with that, knowing that Ricky was going to be what he became?
Yes and no. I'm never a fan of giving away. I didn't like the fact that they had the conditional pick in there, and that really burned them because they ended up losing their 2003 first rounder, even though 2003 was really a hit or miss draft. But, I mean, at that time, and especially, I mean, I think Ron would agree with this as well, that up until that point, the best running back I'd seen play for the Dolphins, me personally, was probably Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So,
or Higgy, little Higgs.
Yeah, Higgs. I mean, like, but when Bernie Parmalee...
Fun guy, by the way.
And I love Bernie Parmalee, but when he's your go-to back, and you think, like, maybe we need to upgrade this
yeah,
group.
Wasn't he a UPS guy, like, right before he was on the team? Do I remember that correctly?
Yeah, he delivered for UPS before he came to the Dolphins. So, which was the story, like, every game in 94, they'd mention that. And you could tell all the announcers were laughing at that point. But, so, I mean, you had this really mediocre history of running backs through the Marino era, going through the Fiedler era, and then Ricky Williams comes through. And I'm just from watching Ricky Williams at Texas, I mean, you knew that it was going to be a significant upgrade, and it was great. But unfortunately, this team has had a lot of bad luck, too. And it's also born out of misfirings in the front office. But it's like when Dan was in there, they had that outstanding offense. You had Duper and Clayton and Nat Moore as your receivers. Marino had a good offensive line to start in the 80s. Then those guys started to retire. Then they started to go ahead. They replenished it, I mentioned, with Webb and Sims. So in the 90s, the running game, not very good at all. With occasional glimpses. They brought in Keith Jackson, who was a really good player for a really good pass catcher at tight end for Marino. And then the defense, like Brian Cox was a good linebacker, but when they brought in Zach Thomas, you could tell that he was a franchise guy. I mentioned Madison, Taylor, Sertan, Daryl Gardner, Bowens in 94. They started to draft all these guys, and they're bringing in on offense, but your best receiver at that point, who was a very good guy going into the late 90s, I loved him, was Aronde Gadsden, who was hardly a game breaker. You know, I mean, maybe one of the slowest receivers I've ever seen, but also made like these highlight reel type catches. And you had O.J. McDuffie, who was never healthy. So you go from this just explosive receiver core in the 80s, those guys like Clayton goes to Green Bay and Duper retires. And then all of a sudden that you have this crew, and now your best receivers are guys who are more would be considered possession guys today, like an Irving Fryer, just because he was later in his career. I mentioned O.J. McDuffie, Mark Ingram did some good things for this team. But it's just like these guys have never been able to sync up all of the great things that have made up this franchise over the years. I think the closest they got to it were the Super Bowl years in the early 70s when they just had that just monstrous defense, a bulldozer running game, a great offensive line, and a very good quarterback at the time. That's the closest they've ever come to putting it all together. And you just hope that's when I hear Channing Crowder go off about talking about those four positions, and I agree 100% on that. And if you're in this draft, I mentioned, you know what you got at the defensive tackle position. You have a young guy you can build around in Ndamukong Suh. Now you're looking to just get one of those positions. Maybe you bring in that corner. If you're fortunate, you get that pass rusher. No one's really expecting the offensive tackle, but that's in play too. They took a guy like Ronnie Stanley out of Notre Dame. You're looking to get one of those and hoping that Tannehill fills one of those parts, and then you just take it from there. Because, I mean, it's going to be a little bit painful, for sure. You've mentioned that several times during this podcast, and I couldn't agree more. Like, it's not going to be all sunshine and rainbows from this point forward. I mean, it's going to hurt a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Keith, you would know, what quarterbacks, off the top of your head, say since 05, do you wish that we had drafted? Now, of course, there's a lot. I wish we drafted, a bunch of guys. But guys that you thought were maybe in play for Miami, and for some reason we just went another direction. Like, because I don't know the draft like you know the draft. So was Aaron Rodgers ever a possibility for us, or was he drafted? Was he drafted? Didn't we draft before and could have drafted him correctly?
We could have had him. The funny thing is, people didn't early on after Cal's bowl game at the end of 2004, beginning of 2005. Before you had because the draft process is always the overanalyzation process, and it's always ways like you've seen guys, you've been impressed by them, you find ways to talk yourself out of certain prospects. And a lot of people in that time, and I mean, it's just really it'll go in as a footnote as just one of the worst times in draft history. For some reason, a lot of teams talk themselves out of Aaron Rodgers and talk themselves into Alex Smith. The funny thing is, one of those guys was Mike McCarthy, who was San Francisco's offensive coordinator at the time. And I mean, we know his history with Aaron Rodgers now. So even he got it wrong, but yeah, I loved Ronnie Brown. That was, in my opinion, the last great running back bonanza in the first round. And that you had Ronnie Brown. He goes to the combine, he runs a 4.4 at, I think, like 200. And I think he was like 235, 225. He was in that range. I mean, he was big. And so comes in, runs that, immediately shoots to the top of the list. Kalak Williams is right behind him, his running mate at Auburn. I wasn't a big fan of Cedric Benson, so of course the Bears drafted him, even though he said he didn't want to play there. But, I mean, to get back to your question, I mean, Rodgers was definitely a guy in there. A lot of Dolphins fans won't admit it now, but a lot of people were interested in Jay Cutler in 2006 out of Vanderbilt. Okay. It wasn't Matt Ryan, though. I know that taking Jake Long over Matt Ryan was a big hang-up and a point of grievance for a lot of Dolphins fans, but looking at what Matt Ryan has done in Atlanta, I don't regret that. I don't think anyone else should too, or I should either.
It's strange because at the time I thought that, and I knew that we needed a quarterback. It was a question, but I was fine to pass on. Hadn't we drafted Henny the year before in the second round, if I'm not mistaken?
We drafted Henny in the second round that year.
That year, okay.
In 2008.
Okay, that's what it was. Okay, because I don't remember freaking out about us signing an offensive tackle. Actually, we got a caller, and I actually have no idea who it is because I do not have anybody else working the board, so I'm going to make this person go live.
It's going to be Max.
See who we got here. All right, hold on 1 second. All right, we got somebody there from the 908 area code. Who we got?
Hey, Ron, how's it going? This is Kyle.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
How you doing, sir? Good. Pretty good. I'm not a Dolphins fan, but I follow the Dolphins, watch them. You know, so, Rod, just listening to your past couple shows, and, oh, my gosh, we all know Miami needs a linebacker, right? I sent you the gif of our beloved Kelvin Shepard. But, you know, I didn't really hear you guys touch upon, like, the idea, like, well, what if Vonnie Stanley drops to pick 8? And Miles Jack is gone. You're not going to take the risk of Jalen Smith there. Probably a little too steep to draft Darren Lee at pick 8. You know, how could you pass on Ryan Stanley, you know, to give Ryan Tannehill that protection that he needs? Because let's be honest, Juwan James, okay, decent rookie year. But what was he last year? Right, Brandon Albert, he's always hurt. You know, he's not getting any younger. Eventually, at some point, you know, he's got a contract that doesn't look so great. You figure you're going to move on from him at some point. What about taking Lonnie Stanley at pick 8? Your thoughts?
Lewis, why don't you go ahead and take that one, man? What do you think about us taking Stanley? Because Mr. Kiper himself, the one who knows all, does have it in his last mock of us taking Stanley. Go ahead, Lewis.
Okay, well, just for the record, I think Mel Kiper is the only one I know who has worse hair than Donald Trump.
Okay.
So, anyway, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to Ronnie Stanley. I understand through Keith and many others that Ronnie Stanley is a very good player and that he would be able to solidify the left side of the offensive line for a very long time. But like I said earlier, my thought process is that Miami kind of has to, like, put out one fire at a time. Right now, left tackle is not a fire that needs to be put out. Brandon Albert, I still think, can play very well. And we could probably move on from him in the next season just as well. So if I'm Miami, I'm looking at what is the biggest need we have right this second. I don't want to hear about what we can do later. I want to hear about what's the biggest problem Miami has right this moment. Right now, that's linebacker, that's cornerback, that's I'm trying to think of another thing. Safety is going to be an issue, but I think we can get by with that with the Lewis Delmas 1 year deal again. And plus we're going to have other players there going to be working on. So we have to put out one fire at a time. We cannot focus on a position that there's already a player that we could count on if he's healthy. Brandon Albert spent the entire year last year rehabbing from being out of shape. They rushed him back, which again was another stupid move by the coaching staff. He shouldn't have been rushed back, and that was the biggest part of why he wasn't Brandon Albert all over again. So if he gets a chance to heal, he's healed up, he gets in shape, and Brandon Albert will be back again. Now, if we have Ronnie Stanley, unless he's going to be moving over to left guard, then I would think that we have essentially said that we are going to remove Brandon Albert and put him in left tackle, but that means that we just used up a draft pick and there's still a hole there where we had them before. So we still have a hole at linebacker. We still have a hole at corner, and we just used up our first round draft pick. Now, I have a problem with that because I want to fill holes, not just kind of make lateral moves.
Hey, Lewis, I definitely respect you a lot, and I hear what you're saying, but, you know, you guys were talking on a previous episode about how, you know, Ozzie Newsome, he's, you know, the gold standard GM. But Ozzie Newsome's philosophy is that he always drafts best player available. And I think what you're saying is need. Our biggest need is linebacker. So, but when you draft in a top 10 pick and you're looking for need, that's where teams run into trouble, is when they look too much into early rounds drafting based on need and not best player available. And if Stanley is the best player available versus, you know, a linebacker who might be in the top 20 range when you rank them on your big board, I think you run into some problems there, just to be honest.
Okay, well, that mentality works when you already have ideas of how you're going to fill up other holes. Where were the Ravens this year? Where were the Ravens a couple years ago? Right now, they're trying to do best player available, and if the Miami Dolphins went with best player available in 2013, and they wound up drafting Deion Jordan, that didn't work out so good. Best player available turned out to be a piece of junk, and even if Deion Jordan had worked out, that would have mean that somebody who was already established would have had to get moved out of the way, and that would mean that some of our best players would not get to be on the field at the same time. So you would have Deion Jordan, the number 3 overall pick, would have had to share his playing time with Cameron Wake, with Olivier Vernon, with this player, with this player. If I'm picking a first-round draft pick and the Dolphins have this many holes, then yes, I am drafting for need, and it's a balance. Obviously, if Miami, let me put it to you this way. If Miami has looked for best player available, and right now the best player available is Laquon Treadwell, with the Miami Dolphins wide receiver situation the way it is, are you going to spend your first-round draft pick on Laquon Treadwell, even though we have Devontae Parker, Kenny Stills, Jarvis Landry, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I don't think he is the best player in the draft, but...
player available.
Let's say he was. Been so outspoken about how Jarvis Landry has been misused, the Dolphins use him too much for too many different things. You stick that guy predominantly in the slot, then you got Parker and Treadwell on the outside. You have a really formidable receiver group. Now, I think in that situation, if you were to run into that where Treadwell is by far the best player on the board, you would look for a trade-down scenario. I mean, that's just the reality of it. But
and you can't do it?
If you can't do it,
thing.
You might have to go ahead.
I actually agree with Kyle. Ryan Stanley is the number one guy on my board. And the other thing to consider here is, without taking sides, just my own perspective when it comes to this thing and my approach is that if you're looking, let's go back to the Channing Crowder thing. You got those four positions. You're likely going to have two guys available who could fill one of those roles. You could have Vernon Hargraves out of Florida as your corner, or you could get Ronnie Stanley as your left tackle out of Notre Dame. And Ronnie Stanley would be the number one tackle in any year that didn't include Laremy Tunsil, Orlando Pace. I mean, we use extreme examples to make the point, or maybe Tyron Smith, although everyone thought that Tyron Smith was just your next USC tackle bust when he was drafted in 2011. But Ronnie Stanley is an exceptional talent. And the one thing that the Dolphins haven't given Ryan Tannehill is that blindside protection he can grow old with. And I love Brandon Albert, although I like Brandon Albert much more as a guard. I always have since he came out of the University of Virginia in 2008. Way bigger fan of him at guard. He was better at that position. I know he wants to be paid like a left tackle. He is now. But if you're at that spot, I would certainly consider it, because if you're just looking at, say, there's a shocker and Hargraves isn't there. Say maybe like San Francisco takes him or Baltimore shocks us and they take him. I don't want to take Mackenzie Alexander number 8 overall. I'm not comfortable taking Eli Apple number 8 overall. And if the pass rushers are gone, well, I mean, what are you going to do? I don't want to reach for Reggie Ragland at that spot. I'm taking the knockout talent. And Kyler, are you a Notre Dame fan?
I am not, no.
Okay. Well, one of my best friends, because I live about 70 minutes away from South Bend. So, I mean, I'm pretty much like in Notre Dame country. And one of my friends just all the time, this winter and spring, is always like, are the Dolphins going to take Ryan Stanley? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not in on their draft plans. And he's like, you got to take him. He's like, you guys are idiots if you pass on that guy with your current offensive line issue. And I mean, I agree with him. And I know that Albert doesn't want to play guard, but if I bring in Ronnie Stanley, Brandon Albert's playing guard. I like Juwan James. He struggled to stay healthy. He had the toe issue last year. I like Billy Turner. I think that Billy Turner is probably, if we're fortunate, the full stink from the Philbin regime didn't get on him. That is my hope, that we're able to go ahead and not really look at him as a reclamation project, but as something where, all right, you weren't completely tarnished. Hopefully we can get you in there. But all that's to say that if you're at number 8 and you're looking to get the best bang for your buck at one of those cornerstone positions, I think it could be Ronnie Stanley. I fear that Ronnie Stanley probably goes to Baltimore, especially with that Flacco 3-year extension, unless that they re-sign Osemele and he's playing left tackle for them, which is obvious. That's obviously will completely predicate what Baltimore does and also really how we look at it. But corners are going to be the tough spot for us because there's not a lot available in free agency now that you got Trumaine Johnson, who is franchised by, I almost said St. Louis, but the Los Angeles Rams. So, I mean, and you're looking at it, we're not going to get Jalen Ramsey. Vernon Hargraves, I think, is the best cover corner in this draft. I have some people who disagree with me on that. Mackenzie Alexander is probably the most gifted in terms of athletic ability. I think Hargraves is overall the best, not named Jalen Ramsey. So, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you're tight at corners, not a lot of options there. Offensive tackle, I mean, if I would draft offensive line every year if I thought I could get away with it. You won't find more people. Many people who value that group more than me. And for some reason, I especially enjoy guys out of the University of Colorado and Colorado State. I don't know why, but I'm with you. If Ronnie Stanley's there, I take a hard look at that because I mean, part of it is if you're expecting more out of Ryan Tannehill, you need to expect more out of the guys who are protecting him, especially on his blind side. And I know that with the pass, you know, this quick pass NFL. The standards for playing left tackle have softened a little bit, but Ronnie Stanley greatly improved as a run blocker at Notre Dame's last year. He was smart to stay there. When he could have come out, he would have been the first left tackle selected last year easily over Brandon. Ronnie Stanley would be playing in Washington, not Brandon Scherff. Let's put it that way. So I'm with you. I take a hard look at it, and for me, it's Stanley or Hargraves, and unless something really messed up happens or we trade up, or we trade down, I think it comes down to one of those two guys.
I guess my only issue is that if, like, you told me that you would move Brandon Albert to guard, the only thing I have with it is that if we draft Stanley, I don't believe Albert is staying. And if that's the case, then we have made a lateral move.
Not necessarily. Well, yeah, except you got a hell of a lot cheaper at that position.
Well, cheaper,
And arguably better because Ron had those same health issues. So I'd consider that a lateral move. I consider it a 45-degree move or something. Because I love Brandon Albert. I was a big fan of bringing him in. They paid him serious money to get him in there. But, I mean, like I said, I think that you've got guys in there. I think that Jameel Douglas probably prospers with this new group in there. Gase got a fair amount out of a really undermanned Chicago Bears group last year, outside of the fact that I think Kyle Long's one of the two best guards in the league. But, I mean, I don't consider it a lateral move because, I mean, you think of the money you save there, and I would love to keep Albert around, but the problem is that he's had the injury issues, and when he goes down on that left side, all of a sudden it turns into musical chairs on the offensive line, and it always ends in tears. And it usually ends with Ryan Tannehill just getting absolutely bulldozed every week. So at some point, something has to be done. And I don't know that all the pieces are in-house. I like Jameel Douglas. I don't want him to play center ever again. I really like Billy Turner. I liked him when he was out of North Dakota State.
I still like him, too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to say this in a cynical way, but I think most rational Dolphins fans still like Billy Turner. They don't look at him as Dallas Thomas, for instance. And we gave Dallas Thomas his fair shake, you know, because early on I was one of the guys go ahead.
No, I'd say yeah, he got more than his fair shake. He got more shake than I care to see anymore, honestly.
Yeah, exactly that. So, I mean – I was one of the guys early on saying, hey, give him a shot before we go ahead. It's not like we had better options at this point. Now I'm to the point where I think a turnstile or empty space would probably be a better option at this juncture. So, I mean, not all the pieces are in there, but if you want Ryan Tannehill to play well, you can't continue to mortgage what you have on the offensive line. And then I'll finish with this. The best example I have right now, you always hear, for some reason, Green Bay's offensive line has a stigma that it's really not that good, even though that when they're healthy, they're one of the best units in the NFL. And you saw two examples of that in that when they were all hurt, they lost both tackles, Bakhtiari, Bulaga. One of the guards got hurt too. The center, got hurt in that game against Arizona right after Christmas, where Aaron Rodgers was just an absolute ragdoll in that game. I think he got sacked. It was eight or nine times. They go back there in the divisional round, And Aaron Rodgers pretty much went untouched with a healthy line in there. He played so much better when those guys are in there and healthy. And Aaron Rodgers, arguably the best quarterback in the game, he needs an offensive line too. When he lost Bakhtiari, lost Bulaga, he just absolutely just got rung up early and often by NFL defenses. You can't do that to Ryan Tannehill and expect him to play better. That's just, it's not going to happen. You can't have both.
So, Lewis, I think probably what you were trying to say is the trade-off for, let's say we get rid of Brandon Albert and we draft Staley, is what you're saying is we didn't fill a hole. All we did was take a position of, well, I won't say strength, but at least that wasn't a hole, and then draft somebody else in that spot, and now we still have all the holes on defense. Am I understanding you correctly? That's kind of where you were going with that?
That's essentially what I was saying. I mean, I still look at cornerback, I still look at linebacker, and I'm just looking at it and it's like, oh my God, if we draft Ronnie Stanley, I mean, I wouldn't be mad at it. Maybe he can become Ryan Tannehill's Jake Long, because Chad Henne had Jake Long for a while, and that was a match made in heaven, if you will. Yeah, right. Anyway, but Jake Long was really good for a while, and his body just broke down, and that's the biggest reason why he was not able to stick around. He wanted big money. He wasn't worth it because he kept getting hurt. And so that was the end of Jake Long's tenure in Miami. Now, Ronnie Stanley, if he becomes his Ryan Tannehill's Jake Long or Dan Marino's Richmond Webb, then great, terrific. That's awesome. We needed somebody like that. But we still have the same issues that we had before. Cornerback is still an issue. Linebacker is still an issue. And these are issues that need to be fixed, and they need to be fixed quickly. We can find a veteran offensive lineman in the free agency. There are a bunch of those to be had. I am not convinced that the free agent linebackers are any good. Danny Trevathan, I mean, I don't think he's anything special, really, because that smells to me of Danelle Ellerbe, and I don't want another Danelle Ellerbe at the middle linebacker spot. I just don't. Don't do that to me again. I'll have a heart attack. As for the cornerbacks, there are better cornerbacks in the free agency than there is in the draft, but Vernon Hargreaves, if he turns – like, the fact – who was it that said that he patterns his game after Brent Grimes? Who said that? Because I want to just go
– He said it himself.
Hargreaves did?
Yeah, they asked him about the guys he patterns his game after, and I think one of the first or second examples he offered up was Brent Grimes.
Gross. But anyway.
Every small cornerback coming in the NFL right now pretty much says that. Bobby McCain said the same thing when he was drafted too. Every guy, if you're 5'10", 5'11", cornerback, I pattern my game after Brent Grimes because you want them to think, oh, well, Brent Grimes is small and he was good. That's just the go-to saying now for the short cornerback, it seems.
The silver lining here is that if Ronnie Stanley does go, if he's drafted by Baltimore, it's likely one of those pass rushers we've talked about, like a Bosa or DeForest Buckner. Those guys will be there. Unless DeForest Buckner goes to San Francisco, they just decide that they want to complete the set with Armstead and DeForest Buckner, which would be a very Chip Kelly thing to do. But I think that one of those pass rushers is going to fall. I like Bosa more than some people, although – if you bring him in and think he's going to be a freak pass rusher, you're going to be disappointed. He's a combo guy. He's a very good pass rusher, but he's also excellent at stopping the run. And I see people giving him the Vernon comparison. I mean, they can just stop that right now because Joey Bosa is 10 times the run stopper that Olivier Vernon is. Olivier Vernon pretty much pays lip service to stopping the run.
Yeah, I was going to say Vernon doesn't stop the run. So I don't understand that comparison at all, which is part of why I don't think he's worth $14, $15 million, honestly.
I agree. I think you're right on with that.
He's cleaned up on other people's scraps, whether it was Sue, Wake, during this time. He doesn't set the edge. He doesn't stop the run. He has a propensity for personal fouls. Seems maybe a little bit immature. I mean, none of that to me sounds like a guy worth $13, $14, $15 million a year. That's
definitely
me. But if it was, trust me, if it was reversed and OV was somebody else's free agent, the Dolphins would be signing him because that's just what the Dolphins do.
that's just what they keep doing over and over again.
Well, if we saw the production that he made, we would think he was that good because we don't see their every game that these people play. We would look at his production and say, well, look what he did here. Maybe he'd be really good.
Yeah, but what about
– And let's not pretend – hang on, Hang on. I want to just say this. Let's not pretend that every move that Miami made, oh, we were just shaking our heads and thinking, what are they thinking? There were a lot of moves they made last offseason that we were like, yeah, this is a great idea. Awesome. Woo. And then it turned out that we fail, and then we're looking at them like, the Dolphins are so stupid. No, let's not have it both ways. We either agree with them or we don't. And a lot of people agreed with what they did last year, and we need to stick by what we said.
I'll be honest with you. I agree. Last year I was gangbusters all the way. Everybody knows it. I came onto the scene and I was like, we're going to do it. I mean, I stopped short of saying we were going to the Super Bowl, but I won't lie, in the back of my mind, I felt like it might happen. But I will continue to say that this year I shall not be fooled. And I already not loving what I'm thinking I'm seeing. That we're going to go and try and load up on free agents again. I know we have massive holes, and if you're the GM of a team, you can't just ride out with what you got because you don't want to build your team through free agency. I get that, but we really got to start. I mean, we just got to start drafting better for starters. I mean, that's case in point. We got to start drafting better. Kyle, you were about to say something?
Oh, no, I just said, Ron, because you were talking about people that bought into all the Dolphins hype last year.
Oh, yeah. I don't deny that. I've stuck to so far this year saying I really want to see us build the team a certain way, and I don't know, renegotiating the Sue contract. I guess if you were going to do anything in free agency, you had to, but I don't know. We just got to nail these draft picks this year. I mean, it starts this year. The turnaround starts this year, and we've got to see improvement from Tannehill this year under Gase, or it's just time cut bait and move on. I mean, that's just my opinion. I think after 5 years, if he is not getting it done for us, we need to start to find other options.
It's a great year to draft defense too. I mean, to have these issues, the Dolphins picked a perfect year to get out there and hit the draft, because I mean, it's in terms of pass, there's a lot of awesome day two pass rushers, guys who are more of the situational variety. But I mean, you keep coming back to that wide nine. I mean, like if they got a guy like Leonard Floyd out of Georgia in the second round, you stick that guy in the wide nine. I mean, that's pretty much just an absolute show with that kind of talent in there. Emmanuel Ogba, I think, is a guy who would really, he might be a late round one now. He had a really good combine. I have a hunch, and it's that we mentioned DeForest Buckner. I've said before, I live in Chicago, and all I hear around here are the Bears are just praying that DeForest Buckner falls far enough where they can get up and snatch him. Several times from people who are actually, I don't have Dolphin sources. I kind of have Bears sources, which I'm kind of ashamed to admit, but,
gotcha.
But I know that the Chicago Bears want DeForest Buckner something fierce. So I think that if he makes it to number eight, that phone's going to ring, because I think that Tampa and the Giants, I think one of those teams absolutely takes him. It might be Tampa. I am fairly certain the Giants would take him. So it's something where maybe you can trade down to. If you can add a second round pick this year, I think you're cooking with gas, because then you can take the best available corner. You can, if you trade down a little bit, you can take Eli Apple. I know some people run hot and cold on Reggie Ragland, but if you're able to trade down, and you can get him, or you can get Darren Lee, the linebacker out of Ohio State, who was really impressive at the combine. But you're able to add those second-round picks, and you can get the position that best fits what you want to do on the defensive side of the ball. And on day two, you can get your pass rusher, maybe if there's a corner or another linebacker there. But, I mean, there's some options to it. And, I mean, I'm definitely – if they draft defense at number eight, I'm praying it's Hargraves. I don't think anyone would take him before the Dolphins, but I've thought that before, and then I've been absolutely humbled. So never say never.
All right, looks like I got Max from Finsiders in Deep End Miami, so I'm gonna bring Max in. Hold on 1 second there, guys. Hey, Max, how's it going, man? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going good, man, going good. I don't know how much of the show you heard. I know you've been busy at work there, but got Lewis on with us, Keith, as you know. I got Kyle from the AFC East Bros podcast as well, and we were really just talking what the Dolphins should really do with this first round pick to try and turn things around. A lot of us are thinking we friends. You know, Kyle's thinking we should kind of start to solidify that O-line and draft Staley. What are your thoughts on it, Max?
I think that it's a little bit premature to be focusing. I mean, I know it's the off season, so we really don't have that much to talk about until next week really kicks off. But it's a little bit premature to look into that. I mean, you know, let's say the team is able to sign Mario Williams and bring in another defensive lineman, then DeForest Buckner's out of the conversation with some certainty. You know, if they bring in Adam Jones and keep Brent Grimes, then we're not going to take Vernon Hargreaves. I mean, it all depends on what happens in the next, you know, in the next 4 days, really, and what happens going forward in free agency. I think a lot of the guys the Dolphins are targeting aren't day one guys anymore in free agency. I mean, we've had a lot of those in recent years. The three that, you know, we can all think of off the top of our heads are Albert, Sue, and Wallace. We're all, you know, top guys at their position in terms of the free agent class who we brought in right away. And then I think this year it's going to be a little more the kind of guys that we get signed on Friday. You know, free agency allows teams to start signing players on Wednesday. I think Friday is when we're going to start seeing the guys. Mario Williams has just wrapped up his visit with the Dolphins. He's heading up, a lot of people say, to New York to visit with the Jets, the Giants. And the Jets are a little bit strapped for cash, especially with Wilkerson getting the franchise tag, trying to extend him. And then you look at the Bills, who are still purging the roster, trying to keep guys like Richie Incognito. So it looks – and as a few people said this morning, Mario Williams would like to stay in the AFC East and terrorize Rex Ryan. So the Dolphins seem like a logical landing spot for him. If the money's right, it would be a good fit. Mike Tannenbaum, just as we all know, loves bringing in defensive linemen.
What do you think the money would look like for Mario Williams, Max?
I think it would look like probably around $6 to $8 million a year on a 3-year deal,
Max,
with the first 2 years.
Max, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, what's up?
What do you base those numbers on?
Basically, like aging defensive lineman contract, given his situation last year, where he I don't know if you've in the last couple of days put on some tape of him and checked it out. I watched a couple games, and the lack of effort was appalling. I mean, it was really like on par with Mike Wallace's lack of effort. So teams aren't going to want to give him that same payday that he got from Buffalo. You know, it's not going to be a massive contract. And if it is, it's going to be a big one-year deal, or it could be a prove-it contract, which we saw last year with Jordan Cameron. You know, it's a low payout this year, and if it pays off, the deal escalates next season. You know, he could get $7 million this year, and it could go up to $12 next year if they like him and if he stays. You know, it entirely depends on what his camp wants and what the Dolphins are willing to do. We saw a lot of those one-year prove-it contracts last season in Tannenbaum's first year with the team, most notably Jordan Cameron and Greg Jennings. And, you know, we've already seen what happened with one of those guys. So the team has no qualms about kicking the tires on a guy and getting him in for 1 year on a low payout, and then if he shines, which we all know Mario Williams is capable of doing, then paying him the big money. It's not optimal, but when you look at the amount of needs that this team has in the current situation, we all scoff at the win now idea because of how this roster looks. But if you look at the talent, I mean, we have Ndamukong Suh in his prime. We have Rashad Jones in his prime. Right now, the way that the NFL has constructed their last collective bargaining agreement, it gives teams a major advantage if they have big contributors who are young players. Right now, there are a couple guys that the Dolphins have. I mean, Lamar Miller is no longer on his rookie deal. He will, if he's with the Miami Dolphins, be on a fairly modest deal, all things considered. It's starting to seem like that is pretty certain to happen. But the league is centered around letting these young teams win. I mean, we saw it with the Seattle Seahawks. We said, how did they have all this talent? It's because they were a young roster on these, you know, rookie deals with the 4 years at a set value and then the fifth-year option for the first-rounders. the Dolphins have that with Jarvis Landry, who doesn't have the fifth-year option because he wasn't a first-round pick, but he's a bargain. Devontae Parker is a bargain. Kenny Stills is a bargain. The team has a lot of these weapons that are pretty cheap, and they really should work now to try to utilize them, because I think we can all agree that if Lamar Miller comes in and we can bring in a guard, which is a relatively cheap proposition, you know, it's not hard to come by a veteran guard who's willing to sign a two-year deal, whatever, then the offense is fine. I mean, the offense will be ready to go next season, and it'll be Tannehill's make or break season based on the way his contract is structured. But it's the team really just needs to bring in as many players on defense as they can. I mean, just like a ton, process of elimination, bring in a bunch of players. And I think they're going to look at a lot, based on what I've heard, a lot of ex-Bengals. You know, whoever Cincinnati lets out those doors, Vance Joseph might try to convince the team to go after. We know Adam Jones is on that list. We know Vincent Ray is on that list. There are a lot of players that the Dolphins are going to kick the tires on from the Cincinnati Bengals.
Leon Hall as well?
I don't know about Leon Hall, because if you pair an aging corner who is undersized and had a torn Achilles injury with an aging corner who is undersized and had a torn Achilles injury, that doesn't seem like a recipe for success for me. I think the Bengals will probably look to keep Leon Hall, and the Dolphins might roll with Adam Jones. If that is the route they go, they could look at Janoris Jenkins, who is also a somewhat troubled young corner. Adam Jones is not young at this point, but we've seen the last couple of years what he can do in Vance Joseph's defense.
Well, I think what we have here, guys, just from talking and listening to everybody talk, you kind of have two different strategies. I almost feel like me and Lewis and I kind of feel like, let's build this team to the draft, the defensive side to the draft, and leave the offense kind of be a little bit, just add some kind of second to third tier guys. But then I kind of hear the other side, where maybe we should just kind of even just really build this offensive line. Let's go get a guard. Let's draft Stanley, and let's just try and fill the holes we can on defense with the free agency. I mean, there's really two ways to look at it. It's trying to fix all these holes and, you know, and try and strengthen the offensive line all in one offseason with like $20 million. It's almost like a magic show they're trying to pull off right now.
First, the money is there. These cuts are not done. Greg Jennings was not the last of players that will be packing their bags in Miami over the next few days. There are going to be more players, and there's going to be more cap room for the team. And it's not necessarily this all-encompassing one or the other strategy, which is the beauty of the NFL and the beauty of the way that you build in the offseason. You know, the team is going to have to take a look at the whole thing and say, where can we add talent on defense that we can't in the draft? You know, because there's a difference between making a win-now move, which is what the Dolphins did in 2013 when they tried to bring in Danelle Ellerby and Phillip Wheeler. They tried to upgrade the linebacking group. But now when you look at the situation, the team knows that the offense will be kind of okay. So they don't even have to do that much for the offense, even if they just bring in one guard in free agency and let Billy Turner and Jameel Douglas kind of work around themselves for the left or right guard spot and then backups. And then, you know, a guy like Alex Boone is a good example whose name I've heard tossed around. Kelechi Osemele could end up sticking in Baltimore due to Joe Flacco's restructure that gives him a lot more money. And he's highly valued by that team. And if he came into Miami, he could end up replacing Brandon Albert at left tackle down the road. So it's very interesting. But I think the team is going to try to go with a difference maker on defense in terms of a guy who can get production, a guy who can come off the edge maybe, or even like a linebacker who can just stuff up the middle of the defense. You know, I personally think it's, when you look at this year's free agent class, way easier to fill needs with defensive backs, way easier. There are not a lot of free agent linebackers this year. There are a few good depth corners. And the Dolphins really, you know, they're not going to have a shutdown group of corners next year. It's just not going to happen. Because they're just so far off. the team is very far off from having a really good roster. But the question is, what can the coaching staff maximize? So you look at Vance Joseph and you say, can he make the most out of some free agent defensive backs who might not have been wanted by other teams? Yeah, he can. He's a defensive backs expert. That's what he does. But you might want to get him some real talent up front to go with Sue, and if Wake stays, and if it's Mario Williams or Olivier Vernon or another player at defensive end or DeForest Buckner or whoever it is. You know, so you might kind of say to Vance Joseph, you work with what we give you on this end, on the back end of the defense, and on the front end, we'll make sure it's stacked, which they could do on the defensive line this offseason.
So, Keith, what if, and I'm going to ask this of everybody, give me 2-3 guys in the first few days of free agency you'd really like to see the Dolphins land coming up here in a few days.
I mean, if I'm being realistic, I would love to see Pat. I mean, it seems incredibly weird to say this just a couple months removed from what happened in that wild card game, but I would love to see Pac-Man Jones in there. I would like to see Jeff Schwartz, just because I'd like to see that just solidify that offensive line. Cause I agree that not a lot needs to be done to the offensive side of the football. I'm probably a little bit different from Lewis in that I like Danny Trevathan. I don't think he's a knockout linebacker, but I liked him when he was at Kentucky. I think he's always been kind of an underrated guy, but I mean, I would say decent in coverage. Although, I mean, you could tell that the Patriots were going after him in that AFC Championship game, and then with the running back, and they just weren't able to make it work on those wheel routes that they were throwing. But I like Danny Trevathan. I think he'd definitely be an upgrade over what we currently have. So those are probably the guys. I know that the prize it would be Georgie Loka, and I just don't think that Cincinnati is going to let that guy. I think he's the best defensive back they have. I don't think that they're going to let him get out the door.
What about you, Lewis? Who would you like us to see? Who would you like to see us get there in these first few days of free agency, if you could pick anybody?
I really like the idea of Mario Williams, although I would disagree with Max on what the numbers would be, because just looking back on even aging pass rushers who've been in the past, like someone like Julius Peppers or Jared Allen, they were making somewhere like $8 or $9 million on their short year deals. So I can't see how Mario Williams is going to get 6 or 7. But either way, I would still like to see Mario Williams get to play in Aquaman Orange, because first of all, the idea of beating Buffalo twice a year because he's going to murder Tyrod Taylor a bunch of times, that sounds like fun, just speaking off the top of my head. But, and then there's also the whole idea of what exactly he would be able to do for us. Olivier Vernon is just way too expensive, again, for the Miami Dolphins to keep. And I would much rather have Mario Williams for his price range. And you brought up, Max, the effort level. And honestly, yes, I understand that. Yes, I see that it's a problem. Yes, I understand he was upset. But he was not upset because he wasn't getting numbers or whatever. He was upset that Rex Ryan had tried to make him something that he's not. Mm-hmm. And it's easier for a defensive end to be used properly than it is for a wide receiver, because Mike Wallace, all he was good at was running forward. He didn't want to become a well-rounded wide receiver, but in this league, if you're only a one-trick pony wide receiver, you're not going to be able to do much. But as a 4-3 defensive end, then that's essentially what you're good at. Cameron Wake can get by being just a pass rusher, but you can't really get by as a wide receiver being just this or just that. It's a different situation. So for Mario Williams, if he says, I am a 4-3 pass rusher, let me pass rush, I'm saying, no problem, we can do that. And because Mario Williams is that good as a pass rusher, and I am not at all really concerned about the effort level, really, because effort level is – he was just mad at Rex. It wasn't so much the scheme. I think it was more along the lines of Rex just tried to say, okay, look, here's what we're going to do because this is my scheme, and the heck with whatever you want, because we're going to do things my way. I don't think he liked that. And I don't think any player should like that. If a coach looks at you and says, we know you're good at this, but we're going to make you do this, I don't think any player should want to be able to – no player should be happy with that. There's team players, and then there's being like – I don't know how to word it properly. But
you can't shut down. You're getting paid $20 million a year to rush the passer. You can't just say, you know, because he wants to drop me back into coverage on 10 snaps a game, I'm going to stop trying. I mean, it was appalling that he just decided that, you know, he was going to cash these game checks but not try for it. And he was rightfully upset. I totally agree. I mean, we've seen it a ton of times. We saw it earlier this year with Sue when he said, when people accused him of freelancing, well, what were they asking him to do other than get into the backfield? Like, were they trying to drop him back into coverage? I hope not. You know, you're entirely right, but you have to play. You gotta go out and give it your all.
Okay, well, if I'm the Dolphins, I'm still looking at Mario Williams as a very real, very excellent player because he still is. Would you say that you're not willing to pay him that money because of what happened
last
year?
I'd be willing to pay him eight. The original thing I said was 6 to 8. I think it could be 6 to 8. And, you know, on the side of 8, it could end up being that. But there's a very – and it could be a one-year deal just to show that he can still do it. Who knows? But I would like to see Mario Williams on the team. He's not in my top 3 free agents because I think you can get by at defensive end. But I would like to see him back. I would see him in Miami.
I want to take care of the pass rush and then look at everything else in the draft. Because if Buckner or Spence or something like that is available, then yes, we can get by. Because that's if Miami picks him. But if they're going to pick somebody like Vernon Hargreaves, then we still have no defensive ends. And there isn't a whole lot of depth in the draft at defensive end. There's plenty of interior guys, but
I disagree with that a little bit. I think that considering the situation the Dolphins want to do or want to get into with their defensive ends, I think that there is good depth on day two. If you're looking for just 4 or 3 defensive ends as a whole, not so much, but those guys are hard to find every year. But if you're looking for the kind of guys that if they're going to align a wide 9, there's a boatload of those dudes available early on day two. So I wouldn't completely rule that out.
Ton of depth.
Keith, you're talking about the tweener guys, right? Those tweener guys?
Yeah, I mean, Leonard Floyd is the best example of that. I think he played like at 230-some. At Georgia, which is just like that's too light for a pass rusher. A lot of people had a problem with that. I mean, where would you put him? I mean, he goes to the combine. He's already like in the high 240s. You'd like him probably even a little bit more. But yeah, the tweener guys, especially because if you're aligning in a wide 9, you're not really being asked to stop the run. I mean you're pinning your ears back and you're at that 45 degree angle. You're crashing down on that left tackle to get to the quarterback. So, I mean, it really streamlines what you're looking for in terms of skill set, and I think a lot of those guys are available on day two.
Kyle, we just got a few minutes left, but I wanted to let you get back into the conversation for a moment. What are you hoping that the Dolphins don't do in free agency since you're not a Dolphins fan?
Well, I kind of hope the Dolphins are foolish and go out and spend a lot of money like they've traditionally been doing. Because I don't think that's what the Dolphins need to do. If I'm a Dolphins fan, I want them to be very frugal in free agency. You know, you guys are talking about linebackers, and Lewis was saying that, you know, Trubisky smells of a Danelle Ellerby again, and I can kind of see that. I can see the worry in that. You know, as you guys are saying, talking about adding, you know, cheap linebackers, I tell you what, we have one who's a free agent right now. I'm not talking about DeMario Davis. I'm talking about Aaron Henderson. This is a guy who was out of the league a couple of years ago because of his alcohol problems. He came back. He was a good citizen last year. And let me tell you what, he took DeMario Davis' spot at the end of the year. He's good in coverage. He's really good at stopping the run. He's not going to break the bank at all. He's around 30 years old, but I'm telling you, a guy on a short-term contract, really cheap deal. The Dolphins should take a look at him. The Jets really want to re-sign him, but he said he's going to test the open market. So I think if you're a Dolphins fan, priority one is, you know, trying to re-sign Lamar Miller, you know, to a reasonable deal. And obviously you're not going to pay Olivier Vernon, but I think they just need to go out and get smart free agents. I like Iloka if they could get him, but I think he's going to get a lot of money elsewhere. So the Dolphins, I think they just need to worry about drafting really well and, you know, kind of settling into that second and third wave of free agency and not being the guys that at 4 p.m. on whatever day free agency opens up, they're making the big splash that they've done the past couple of years, because it just hasn't worked out. So me as a Jets fan, I want to see them do that again.
I appreciate
all right,
the
guys, we've got about a minute left here. So is anybody – Keith, did you want to say something real quick?
I think it sets a tone if the Dolphins go into free agency and don't do everything Kyle just described, but instead address the areas that they, I mean, where they can get better. I mean, let's be honest, you add any defensive players, you're getting better. So if they can do that, it sets a tone that this isn't just a big spender anymore. Like, they're interested in the long build toward becoming a good defense.
All right, guys, we got about 30 seconds. So I just want to thank everybody, all the guests. I got Max from Siders in the Deep End Miami. Got Kyle from AFC East Bros podcast. Got Keith from the Finn Siders podcast. And Lewis Sung from Finn Mania Report. If you'd like to follow the show, you can hear it on at Unsquish the Fish, or follow it at Unsquish the Fish on Twitter would be the best place to reach me. I appreciate everybody listening, guys. And Finn's up.